most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today is Friday, July 27th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us here at Normal to help end marijuana prohibition in America. Folks, legalization won't happen without your support, so make sure to make a donation or join Normal right now today at NORML.org. There's going to be some special membership promotions coming up for Normal here very soon, and everyone, don't forget about the August 10th concert down in Austin, Texas, with Willie Nelson, Carolyn Wonderland, and more. It'll be emceed by Mark Stepnoski, former Dallas Cowboy and member of Normal's advisory board. We have links to more about the Austin Freedom Fest up on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Norm Kent here on the program today to talk about his open letter to Senator Norm Coleman. Also, Steve Bloom and Danny Danko. It's all here for you today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Let's get things going right now. Up on the stash today, we're continuing our monthly discussions with High Times cultivation editor Danny Danko. So let's put our green thumbs on and find out what's happening in the world that grows. Dan, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Thanks, Chris.
Great to speak with you today, Dan. Now, it is summer, sort of the naturally best time for growing anything, but for medical marijuana patients, most grow indoors these days, I'm sure.
I would say primarily indoors, although out in Cali, there's plenty of people doing a lot of outdoor as well.
And just because of the environment out there on the West Coast, is that why people grow outside there?
Climate and the culture has been going on for so long out there that, you know, tricks have been handed down over the years, and people really know what they're doing.
And is that why the best medical marijuana comes from Oregon, Washington, and California? Because that knowledge is there to be shared and passed down.
Yeah, I think they've just been at it much longer, and you know, they really have a passion for it as well. You know, the Pacific Northwest and California in particular in the West are, I mean, they're light years ahead for the most part of the rest of the country in growing right now.
Righto. Also, Dan, I want to ask a cultivation expert about this. Canada's state-run medical marijuana program grows their cannabis literally at the bottom of a remote mine shaft in a place called Flin Flon. Does growing marijuana at the bottom of a mine shaft, does that seem like an ideal environment to you?
I would say it's not ideal just because it's harder to control the environment. But I'm sure, you know, I'm sure with the force of the Canadian government, they could implement enough environmental controls down there. But you're definitely dealing with a lot of humidity and, you know, cooler temperatures that, you know, you have to monitor during the dark cycles of growth.
So growing it at the bottom of a mine, probably not the best idea here.
I don't think it's ideal. I mean, ideal is outdoors, you know, in full sun. You know, that's ideal.
And as opposed to the frozen tundras of Flin Flon, how is the medicine cultivated in California right now? Are they using soil or hydroponics?
Well, the outdoor growers obviously are almost all doing soil, and there's a lot of greenhouse stuff going on out there. Some interesting stuff that they're doing with light deprivation as well in greenhouses. You know, a lot of the indoor stuff, people do choose to do hydro, and there's been advancements in organic hydroponic nutrients as well. So people are sort of catching on to the organics, even the ones that are doing hydro.
Dan, you mentioned light deprivation. You know, what does that entail?
Well, what they do is they start the plants pretty early, you know, late winter, early spring, and they've got them all ready to a decent size. And then throughout the summer, as the plants, once the plants are, you know, large enough for them to start flowering them, they use this technique, which is basically light deprivation. For 12 hours a day, they cover the greenhouse with some kind of a dark tarp. There's even companies that make automatic light deprivation greenhouses. They're fairly expensive. I mean, the easiest, simplest thing is just to, you know, cover it for 12 hours, and then they get a harvest in the middle of summer, you know, around July or so. They're already pulling down their plants, and this is before, you know, the helicopters start flying and the rippers and, you know, everyone's looking for the plants. So they managed to get, so a lot of people managed to get two outdoor harvests instead of one with one season.
And you mentioned a phrase that not everyone may be familiar with. Dan, tell us what rippers are.
Well, you know, there's a whole culture out there of people who will prey upon cannabis growers because, you know, they're fairly vulnerable. It's difficult sometimes for them to go to the police if they're growing, you know, more plants than they're allowed. And, you know, the gray market sort of brings out the worst in some people, and there's those who make a living just going around and, you know, stealing people's plants or, you know, robbing their gardens.
And do you think that ripping has become more of a problem with medical cultivators these days?
I think it's just pretty much been steady. You know, there's always someone out there that's willing to rip people off. That's why it's important not to, you know, not to brag too much and let, you know, a lot of people know what you're doing. In fact, don't let anyone know, you know, that doesn't need to know that you're growing, because there's a lot of temptation out there for people, you know, down on their luck or, you know, unscrupulous types to just rob it because, you know, they know what it's worth.
So on one hand, there's a lot of good knowledge being shared. On the other hand, medical cultivators have to be really careful who they talk to about growing, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, out there, you know, people are fairly secretive about what they do as well. I mean, they don't want everybody knowing what's going on.
Now that places like Rhode Island have their medical marijuana laws permanent and patients and caregivers are cultivating medicine, is there a chance for East Coast cultivators to use their natural environment, or are they really going to have to go indoors?
Oh, no. I mean, the climate in the Northeast is actually great for growing good cannabis. You know, it's a shorter season slightly, but there's plenty of strains that will finish, you know, in you know, September, early October, before any sort of frost. So, you know, there are plenty, you know, there's plenty of opportunity for growers out here. I just think that, you know, there's not as much of a culture of it as out west.
So you don't need to live in a tropical environment to grow medicine outdoors?
No. I mean, there are tropical varieties, and there are, you know, much faster flowering varieties. There's varieties in that they grow in Alaska with a very short season. And, you know, the Canadians aren't too shabby at the outdoor as well. They've got plenty of you know, farmable space.
And, Dan, what would you say are the standout medical marijuana strains right now in California?
Well, there's everybody in California is crazy about the Kush. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, basically there's a lot of varieties of Kush out there, and a lot of people find pain relief definitely from those strains, OG Kush and Granddaddy Kush, and I mean there's you know probably over 100 different varieties of that strain that are slight variations basically on the same sort of Kush theme, which is very, very crystally. They're not heavy, heavy yielding plants, but they're very powerful and potent, particularly the OG Kush.
So it just requires growing more plants to get that good supply of medicine.
Right, right. You end up having to grow, you know, more plants or vegetate them for a little longer in order to get a decent yield out of them. But people find that, you know, for pain relief and, you know, as medicines, that in particular is a very strong one.
Now, you do have to get the right seed strain, but do the Kush plants require more care?
Well, it's a matter of getting the right strain for sure and then sort of understanding that particular strain's needs as well because, you know, they vary pretty heavily across the spectrum of plants. Some plants are not heavy nitrogen feeders at all, so you have to really lay off early on in giving them too much nitrogen. And, you know, some plants will just keep absorbing all the nitrogen you give them. So really it's knowing the strain and it's, you know, its characteristics, which a lot of that information is available online. And, you know, there's a lot of people trading that information basically anonymously on the Internet, which is actually wonderful. That's been a tremendous boost to the growing community because, you know, strains are traded, information is traded, and people are just, you know, people are getting better and better at growing.
And Dan, the event that showcases the best strains of marijuana on the planet, the Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam, is coming up pretty quickly here in the fall. It will be the 20th annual Cannabis Cup this year. I wonder if you can give us a little preview of what we might see.
Well, I know it's going to be very a very tough competition this year. Everybody who I've spoken to, the breeders in Amsterdam and some of the Canadians and Americans are have really taken up the challenge, and you know, the seed company strains especially are very difficult to judge. You know, everything is really up there in quality and, you know, all the characteristics that you find in great pot. The coffee shop stuff, you know, it's good, but, yeah, when you get it directly from the breeders, it's fantastic and very difficult to pick and choose. Who will win. You know, there's always the perennial favorites, and then you always see somebody that comes in and wows you, you know, with something brand new that you haven't experienced before.
And for travelers to Amsterdam, what would be some of the strains they would encounter in the coffee shops there?
Well, there's a lot of Jack Herer out there, a lot of G13 Haze. You know, that's the basis of a lot of their strains. There's skunks, you know, skunk number one type of strains. You know, there's the Real McCoy. A lot of it is based on Northern Cali genetics and Pacific Northwest genetics from the 80s and 90s. I actually have an article coming out in our October issue, which is just now being printed, and it's the Seed Bank Hall of Fame. It's our first annual inductions. So of the Seed Bank's, you know, pioneers, many of them who basically brought this industry into being and are sort of the mainstays of cannabis genetics, you know.
So the strains in a commercial recreational coffee shop in Amsterdam, they're going to be much, much different than strains in a medical marijuana dispensary in California.
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, I think a little bit less care goes into growing some of them as well because, I mean, the turnover is so great in Amsterdam and the demand for quality isn't that great. You know, a lot of people are mixing their cannabis with tobacco and, you know, it's a little bit less important, I guess, than, you know, someone in Cali who's, you know, got MS or, you know, something where they really need something strong. I mean, there's a lot of things that just don't work for them. You know, they'll smoke and it won't relieve their pain and it won't do, you know, whatever it is, you know, stimulate their appetite. So the demand for quality, I think, is much greater in California.
When you talk about Europeans mixing tobacco and marijuana, we do that with blunts here in the States. How do Europeans pull that off?
They mostly just empty out cigarettes, you know. Huh. They get a pack of Marlboro Lights or whatever it is that they do. You know, you got to sometimes ask when there's a joint being passed around over there, or else you might end up with a lung full of, you know, unfiltered tobacco mixed in with the pot.
Pretty so, gross, actually.
Yeah, if you're not a cigarette smoker, it can be quite an experience.
I mean, does it give a different high, a different experience?
Yeah, I think early on, you know, that the tobacco sort of, you know, gives them some kind of a head rush as well. It's kind of just a tradition that they've had. I think because they don't really have much of a grass culture until it was brought over there. There was much more of a hashish-related, you know, cannabis culture there. So when they smoke hash, they would mix that with tobacco. And I think that when the pot, you know, made it onto the scene, they sort of just continued that tradition.
Righto. We're with Danny Danko, the High Times Magazine cultivation editor. Dan, I want to switch gears with you here from cultivation to softball, kind of ready for something completely different here. I know you're on the High Times Media League team, the Bong Hitters, and you just had a game this week. Tell us how that went.
It went great, actually. We beat the New Yorker magazine. It was 19-5. That was yesterday in Central Park.
Oh, 19-5, you clobbered those guys.
Yeah, well, you know, they're not the most athletic of types.
So it's turning out to be a pretty good season for the Bong Hitters there, it sounds like.
Yeah, pretty good. We've had a few losses, you know, tough loss against one of our rivals, Wall Street Journal, but we play them again on Monday, so we're hoping to get our revenge. They are, as you know, a pretty conservative paper, so we like to stick it to them every chance we get.
And the Bong Hitters have made some media themselves because of all this, too, I hear.
Yeah. Well, we had a winning streak there for a while of about 30 games, and, you know, we had CNN coming out. There was an article actually in the New Yorker magazine and a few other publications. Basically, even Sports Illustrated did a little bit about us and our streak there.
And, Dan, New York is pretty damn competitive when it comes to baseball. Does that carry over to softball, do you think?
It does, especially in the media league, because I don't think anybody wants to go back to their office and say they lost to High Times, you know what I mean? And so it seems like, you know, over the years they've gotten extra motivation to really, you know, bring out the best.
And do you think this New York Media League, do you think it will expand here as well?
Well, this is the first year we've actually, you know, we have like playoffs and a real, you know, league with a commissioner and everything. So I can only see that expanding. We have six teams in the league right now, and other teams are clamoring to be in for next year. So I have a feeling it's going to expand pretty quickly.
Well, Dan, this has been a really great conversation again today. I really appreciate you taking time to join us here on the Audio Stash each month. Can't wait to speak with you again.
Great. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you again, Dan. Danny Danko is the cultivation editor at High Times Magazine. We have links to his columns right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Next up today, we're going to speak with a member of the Normal Legal Committee who has created a lot of media buzz by writing an open letter to a sitting U.S. senator. Today, we welcome attorney Norm Kent to the program to discuss his letter to Senator Norm Coleman of Minnesota. It's caused quite a stir out there. Norm, welcome here to the program. What prompted you to write this letter to Senator Coleman?
Well, I think when you've known somebody 40 years and they rise to a position of public prominence and national stature, as Norm Coleman has, and you find that they're in positions of influence and responsibility, and the posture they're taking and articulating is so strikingly hypocritical of the way they once felt and what they once believed, it was incumbent upon me to try to send my buddy a wake-up call, if you will, a written slap in the face to say, hey, we're talking about pot here. We're talking about stuff we used to do in the dorm rooms, not just me, but you, but your brother-in-law, Billy, your girlfriend, Janet, Nancy, Peter, Jonathan, all of us 35, 40 years ago. Look, we're record producers, we're philosophy professors, we're doctors, we're lawyers, we're engineers, we're political consultants. I guess pot didn't really destroy our lives, Norm. How about owning up to that instead of adopting, supporting, and endorsing the Neanderthal right-wing approach of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, which had just a week before issued a statement saying that pot smokers are more likely to become gang members than not. So you combine a bunch of those things, and I was on my way to court one morning to try to stop somebody from going to jail for pot, and felt like this compulsive inner need to write to Norm Coleman, and did. And much to my surprise, this has taken off, 20 pages on Google and all over the internet.
It has indeed garnered a lot of attention. It's been blogged about extensively, picked up by a few newspapers. But Senator Coleman has, you know, this kind of squeaky clean image now of a right-wing party line tower. But that certainly wasn't the case when you were in college with the now senator, was it?
You know, this is a guy who was a hippie freak leader of the Students for Democratic Society that helped take over buildings, protest an unjust war in Vietnam, that is now a cleaned up Republican senator who's had his teeth done, his hair styled, his face remodeled to look like the classic kind of politician he once opposed. And look, everybody has a right to look better. I don't put him down for any of that, to want to look presentable and aesthetic physically. I'm challenging him for what he's saying politically. And I think what Norm needs to own up to is that marijuana was not now then a major health hazard, and it is not now. But more than that, let's focus on the fact that the very laws he votes to enforce today would have kept him from going to law school and kicked him out of college yesterday. In other words, we both get federal student loans in the 60s and 70s, yet today's laws that Norm Coleman votes for would deny students with pot convictions federal student loans. That's the essence of hypocrisy. The laws that we broke back then could have put us in jail back then and stopped us from ever becoming members of the bar, and lawyers and senators. So what future senator, what future congressman is Norm Coleman blocking today from being a congressman tomorrow because of behavior he himself took part in yesterday? You see, and to boot, I know I'm going on too long, but to boot, just this week, and this is something I hope to be writing another letter about very soon, so it may make the rounds like this one.
And yet there are plenty of baby boomers, Norm, who are not ashamed of their past. A lot of baby boomers have not necessarily changed their views or even their image drastically like this at all.
Precisely. So own up to who you are and what the truth was, and let's stop criminalizing behavior in 2007 that we engaged in 1967. And I'm being polite when I say a lot of us woke up on the floor eating Chinese food after smoking pot. We did a lot more than pot in the 1960s. It was a time of Timothy Leary, of, turn on, tune in, and drop out. But all we're asking for is that herb, which is legal in Amsterdam, where the planes fly on time and people get to work every day and society is productive, and in places like California where there are medical dispensaries, that these people who use it medically, who use it necessarily, not be criminally prosecuted or unjustly targeted by unfair laws. And it's going to take the Norm Colemans of the world, who smoked pot back then, to say we need an enlightened policy today. It's one thing to have natural adversaries who have stayed the course for 50 years and have always been on one side of the equation. But to have your friends and people know better turn on you, we're going to have to expose who they were. And it's not something I look forward to. This is a guy whose inauguration I went to, who I've counted as a friend, who I admire for some of the work he's done in the United States Senate. But, you know, when it comes to pot laws, let's stop being such a dope on dope.
Well, Norm, we'll be looking out for those next letters from you. This one seems to have, again, created a lot of good buzz out there.
The actual letter that I wrote, it's available on a website that I publish, nationalgaynews.com, as one of the publisher's editorials. But more so, all the letters, all the blogging, everything that's been written about this has been synthesized remarkably by the former High Times writer Steve Bloom on a site called www.celebstoner.com, which is a fun site for your listeners anyway.
Yeah, Steve Bloom, in fact, is coming on in about 60 seconds here for our weekly CelebStoner.com update, actually.
You know, Steve is the one who helped make this a national story, and I'm glad to hear you have him on every week.
Righto, Norm. Well, thank you again for taking time to speak with us here today, and I look forward to having you back here on the show.
Okay, bye-bye.
Norm is a criminal defense attorney in Florida. He's got his own radio show down there. We have links to his website at normalaudiostash.com. Stay tuned. Our CelebStoner.com update coming up next.
I want to be famous. I want to wear minks and satins and pearls.
Steve Bloom is the man with his finger on the pulse of celebrity folk who enjoy a toke. You can read about it all at CelebStoner.com. Steve, welcome back here to the Audio Stash today.
Hi, Chris. How you doing?
Doing very well this week, Steve. Sure has been a busy week, though, with the Hinchey-Raubacher Amendment. But not just a busy week here at the Normal Studios, but also a huge busy week in celebrity news. Let's start off with the ultimate Hollywood bad girl right now. Let's talk about Lindsay Lohan.
Well, that's been obviously the huge tabloid story of the week. Lindsay Lohan was arrested on Tuesday morning for a DUI, possessing coke and driving recklessly and driving without a suspended license. This is all in Los Angeles. The story has been sort of developing and evolving all week long as to like what actually really happened, what set her off, and you know, she's been in the news, you know, quite a bit, you know, over the last several months. She had a previous arrest similar to this, a driving arrest. She had a little crash driving late at night, was charged with DUI and also possessing cocaine. And then she went into a rehab facility, the Promises facility in Malibu, for 45 days. You know, to clean out, and she came out of that rehab wearing an ankle bracelet that would detect alcohol use, and she was actually fashionably shot with that in the last week or so, and, you know, supposedly she was clean, but who knew, and, well, she had kind of went up the wagon, you know, so to speak, on Monday night when she was at a party. Now, presumably she was probably, you know, doing things when she was out of the rehab, you know, the bracelet would not detect drug use, but it would detect alcohol use. And I guess the bracelet works is that, you know, if alcohol is absorbed into your system, the person who is supposed to be monitoring it on the other end, like a friend or in her case the lawyer, is supposed to, you know, get in touch with her immediately and, you know, see what's going on. And apparently that night, you know, the bracelet stopped working, or it showed that, you know, she was using alcohol. The lawyer tried to track her down, but in the meantime, you know, a kind of a crazy scenario developed where Lindsay had a dispute with a woman who was called her assistant, and she went chasing after the assistant in a vehicle, and apparently she went into a vehicle that was not even hers and went on a wild chase through Malibu into Santa Monica, all in the L.A. area, and she ended up losing the vehicle that was she was chasing. Apparently, she was running lights left and right as she was riding, you know, furiously, you know, speeding along late night in Los Angeles. And she ended up going to the house where the assistant lives, or at least where her mother is. And the mother's car pulled up about simultaneous to the time that Lindsay's car pulled up, and then they went into a big chase. And as it turned out, that car headed, you know, towards a police station in Malibu, in Santa Monica, pulled into the Civic Auditorium parking lot. Police noticed there was a chase going on. They pulled in there. The two vehicles were there. There was an argument that was ensuing between Lindsay and the driver of that vehicle, which was the assistant's mother. And then the police basically, you know, grabbed Lindsay, you know, started to, you know, ask her questions about her state at that point. She apparently had alcohol in her breath. She then failed a sobriety test, and then she was arrested. She was taken to the police station at Santa Monica Police Jail, and she was, when they did a search in the jail, they found cocaine in her pants pocket. So she was charged with driving under the influence, possession of cocaine, driving with a suspended license, and also bringing a controlled substance into a jail facility. So she had all those things on her. About 5 hours later, she was released on a $25,000 bail, and she has since claimed that she didn't do it, that she put on pants that didn't belong to her, that somebody else was driving the vehicle, just a whole series of lies. And it's all over the web, and so we've been covering it at Celeb Stoner this week and just updating it on a daily basis, because there was, at first it was unclear who was the assistant, and then the first night, you know, all the websites were trying to figure that out. Finally, it became clear that it was a woman named Taryn Graham, and the mother was a woman named Michelle Peck, and so nobody even knew who those people were. And now on TMZ website, they released interviews and videos with three men, two of whom were in the vehicle with Lindsay while the chase was going on, and they're interviewed saying that they were trying desperately to stop Lindsay from driving crazily. They kind of like, she jumped into a friend's car, you know, while the guys were in the car, and then just took off crazily and ran over some guy's foot in the process. This was outside a party where Lindsay had had a fight with the assistant who was arguing with her boyfriend, one thing or another, craziness. And, you know, Lindsay took off on this crazy chase. And so all of this news is all over the place. And, you know, she, you know, is in big trouble. You know, Nicole Richie was sentenced today for a DUI. And she got 4 days. Now, of course, Paris Hilton did her 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you know, about a month ago. Both of those situations were not as severe as this. So, you know, Lindsay Lohan, who is back in a rehab facility, as we hear, you know, is going to really face, she's going to do some serious time for these charges, which are multiplying, you know, over the months. And, you know, it's not funny. It's not a laughing matter. And, you know, she's in serious trouble.
And Steve, I mean, is this so out of place here for Lindsay Lohan? I mean, if Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Marilyn Monroe, if they were all around today, wouldn't they have faced the same kinds of scrutiny, the same kinds of things?
Well, yeah, I suppose so, but I think it's gotten a little out of control. You know, I don't think that, you know, yeah, those guys back in those days, you know, there wasn't so much media following every move, and there wasn't, you know, websites, you know, with paparazzi, you know, just, you know, camping out in front of people's homes, and, you know, so you knew every step of the way what people were sort of doing, or at least attempting to find out. I think it's, you know, the media pressure now is so much greater on celebrities than in the past, when they could do a lot of things and go under the radar. So I think it's a lot different than it was then. And, you know, so the culture today is a little more drug-oriented. The drugs are much more available. Back then, those, you know, celebrities were probably mostly drinking, maybe smoking a little pot. You know, now, you know, cocaine is much more popular. Other prescription drugs are much more popular. So I think it really is a different time and era than it was then.
Righto. Well, also this week, there's another Hollywood bad girl, Paris Hilton. Thankfully, Paris is leading a much kinder and gentler life than Lindsay Lohan. Paris was seen smoking some marijuana with Cisco Adler, actually in New York this week. What's happening there?
Cisco Adler, who had been dating Barton, and they broke up a couple of months ago. So he's sort of famous for that. And Cisco is sort of a Hollywood playboy, I suppose. Lives in Malibu. His father is Lou Adler. Interesting background. Lou Adler is the director of Up in Smoke, the Cheech and Chong movie. He's also the director of Monterey Pop, the movie about the great music festival that occurred 40 years ago, and they're celebrating now since it's an anniversary. He was the producer of Cheech and Chong's earliest LPs, so sort of famous in that right. And, you know, Cisco's grown up in that environment, you know, with a wealthy dad, and just he's in a band called White Star, which is a hard rock band. And I guess Cisco just knows all the, you know, the starlets out there. And he was out with Paris, apparently, at a club called Guys in West Hollywood a couple of nights ago. And they were doing karaoke. And apparently they were smoking in the club. People said they smelled the fragrant smell of, you know, of cigarettes, that weren't tobacco. And, as I've stated over and over and over again, you know, on your show and on my website, Paris Hilton is a pot smoker, and, you know, more so than I think any other drug that's been sort of connected to her. I think that's her favorite. And Cisco, you know, I suppose as well. Matter of fact, Cisco is a, the book that I have coming out in the fall, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life. Cisco contributed a how-to section on how to make a gravity bong. So Cisco's part of our book. And, we asked Paris, but Paris had declined, because I think she just wants to lay low. So there they are, you know, the potheads meet each other, you know, in Hollywood, and certainly on the star level, the celebrity level, they know who each other is, and, you know, somehow or other, you know, they've, you know, come together. You know, I don't know if they're a couple or if that was just a one-off, you know, canoodle, as they like to say in gossip terms, you know, because they were supposedly kissing and smoking and singing, but then they kind of left the club and went off separately. So, you know, as they were being followed by the paparazzi, there was no indication they went off on their own. So this is the second time since Paris got out of jail that there's been a reference to her in marijuana at a club, where she came out of a vehicle going into another club, might have been Guys as well, but or another club in Hollywood, and she came out of the vehicle, and it was like a hot box vehicle with smoke pouring out, and she was greeted by somebody, and, you know, it's sort of like there's smoke just coming right exhaling out of her mouth. So somebody had made a comment about that, and that went out on the web. So this is the second time. So three times, and she's, you know, it's pretty clear, you know, she's back out there smoking. But again, you know, look at her and look at, you know, Lindsay, and I can't speak for Nicole Richie's behavior since she had her problems, but, you know, they just flaunt the law. They don't seem to care. You know, once they get into trouble, they figure, hey, don't worry, somebody will pay for it, somebody will take care of it, and I won't go to jail. Or now, with Nicole Richie getting a four-day sentence, it's almost like, hey, you know, she's trying to keep up with Paris. Paris did 23 days. Well, I'm going to do some days in jail too, you know? So now it's becoming like the cool thing to go to jail.
There's a lot of celeb stoner headlines we did not get to today, like the Los Angeles raids by the DEA, the sports stories. Everyone should check out all of the content up at celebstoner.com today. And Steve, many thanks for joining us again this week.
All right. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you again, Steve. Steve Bloom is the man with his finger on the pulse of celebrity folk who enjoy a toke. Read about it all up on the website, celebstoner.com. We have links to it on our website at normalaudiostash.com.
What's up, guys? This is Miss High Times 2007, and you're chilling with us here at the Normal Podcast.
Oh, and since we were talking about the celebrity bad girls like Lindsay Lohan, I found this song. I really dig it. I've been driving around in my car listening to it. It's by a great group called The Distillers. And this is a tune called L.A. Girl. And since we were just talking about Lindsay Lohan, I've been looking for the right time to play this on a radio show or a podcast. Right now just seems like a good time. A fun song for a fun weekend. And again, very appropriate for the Hollywood bad girls. Here's The Distillers with L.A. Girl. We found this up at the Independent Online Distribution Alliance. We have links to The Distillers up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Again, this is called L.A. Girl.
This is the story about some L.A. women. L.A. women on L.A. mission. This is the glory. Gonna get that hook in. Gonna drag you way down. Yeah, you wanna go home soon. What? says you ain't glossy, so no tragedy. Delivered to the city, a new beginning. Hell and glory in the name of the enemy. Is that your restless casualty?
That was the awesome, unbelievably cool and energetic group, The Distillers. They have a new name out there, and you can find them online. We found that track up at the Independent Online Distribution Alliance. It's called LA Girl, and we have links to The Distillers' website up on our own at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. If you listen to the Audio Stash, vote for us at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. Everyone have a fun summer weekend out there, and we're back at 4:20 on Monday. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.